Welcome back to Shattering Myths. This is our second hour. We're going to turn our attention to Yah's testimony. I am really, though, pulled to sharing with you something that's derived out of that news segment that I think is so related to the foundation we're trying to establish to come to know Yahweh as he actually is, and why God wants us to walk away from religious and political influences, that I'm tempted to go there, and I think I'm going to succumb to this temptation. We're talking about the elections in Mexico and how the party that lost has concrete and irrefutable evidence to prove that the party that won overspent their limits by six times, and that they bought votes. It is the Machiavellian strategy of the ends justify the means. I recall about 3 or 4 years ago, my youngest son had transferred to a Christian college. It's not that he's Christian. Neither of us are Christian. But they had a really fine science department. And because of their science department, he and the professors there, which turned out to be terrific for him, he attended the school. But one of the requirements of the school is that he take what was equivalent of almost a year's worth of religious classes. And one of those classes, he was asked to write a paper on Machiavelli. And so I enjoy research, and I thought I would research this along with him. And so in the process of researching this, came to know Machiavelli, and my son, who is anti-religious and anti-political, compared Machiavelli to the likes of Mao Zedong, to the likes of Adolf Hitler, to the likes of Muhammad specifically, and Quran quotations from Muhammad, and also to Paul. And it is just fascinating that Machiavelli's the ends justify the means, which means it's okay to lie, it's okay to cheat, it's okay to come across falsely, so long as your intended goal is achieved. And so here's a thought in that regard that I wanted to share with you, is that, you know, Paul specifically says that to those who are Jewish, I pretend to be Jewish. To those who are Gentiles, I am a Gentile. To those who are Torah observant, I pretend to be Torah observant, although I'm not. To whatever it takes to succeed, I do that thing. It is more Machiavelli than Machiavelli's own writings. When we use deception to advance our agenda, then our agenda has no merit. There is never a justification to lie, to cheat, to deceive on the basis of deception, on the basis of, it doesn't matter what I do now, the ends will justify the means. We have Jason back on the line, and before I bring Jason back on, there's two things that Jason said yesterday, and I'm glad we have Jason back, because there's two things that he said in his ending statements yesterday that I do want to comment on, and then I'm going to let Jason finish his thoughts. One is he talked about the book of Matanyah, known as Matthew to us. Matanyah means Yah's gift. That there were Hebrew translations and Greek translations. What we know about Matanyah is that it was originally written in Hebrew. Unfortunately, to my knowledge, we have yet to find one of those original Hebrew manuscripts. And the reason is that Yehudim, at the direction of Akiva and Bar Kokhba, made it their goal to destroy any Hebraic writings that discussed Yahusha. And so they would have scoured every possible place to destroy a Hebrew copy of Matanyah. I would love to have one. It would be one of the great treasures to have this disciple's original testimony written in Hebrew. We unfortunately only have it in Greek, which is a translation of what he had to say. The second thing that Jason said, which was profound, and I want to comment on it, and then we'll bring Jason on the air. He said that rather than his realization that the Christian New Testament could not be trusted, leading him to the point of agnosticism, because therefore, you know, it proves that the basis of the Christian religion is unsound, it did not lead him there. It did not lead me there. When I came to realize what I've shared with you, that the Christian New Testament is absolutely unreliable, is that it did not lead either of us away from God, but to God. And the way it led us to God is we realized the thing that is reliable, the thing that can be trusted, is Yah's Torah, His prophets and Psalms. And then once we came to understand the Torah, prophets and Psalms, now I'm reading a lot into Jason's final comment, and I'll let him correct me if I'm wrong, but I can say emphatically for myself, once I came to understand Yah's perspective, His covenant gift, His relationship with the Messiah, once I came to understand that from the perspective of the Torah, prophets, and Psalms, it became very easy to know what was written and translated into Greek in the Christian New Testament that was trustworthy, and that which was had been edited and was unreliable. That was the last comment that Jason made on the air yesterday. And so, without further ado, this is Jason again in Toronto. Hello, Jason.
Hi. Thanks for giving me another chance to finish what I was saying. I noticed after I left yesterday, I kind of made a slip of the tongue. What I was trying to get at was the Hebrew Matthews that I had learned about. They changed the word husband and father. Then you can see that in there's an Aramaic translation of Matthew. And as far as I know, they back of the Iron Curtain or whatever, they've got more Hebrew texts of Matthew. I think they have about 28 now. I don't know if they're complete or.
Let me stop you there, Jason. Yeah. There are a lot of sites that are claiming to have copies of the original scriptures, and they're popping up everywhere. And everything that I can just tell about them is that they're all false. The oldest Aramaic translation of any of the books in the Christian New Testament dates to the 6th century. And so we have, you know, just from the late 1st, 2nd, and 3rd century prior to Constantine and the creation of Roman Catholicism, we have 69 rather comprehensive manuscripts, all written in Greek, along with a history of verification that there was a Hebrew Matthew, that Matthew was originally, Matanyah, was originally written in Hebrew, but there is no extant copy of it. And then you don't get to the Aramaic translation, which is useful in the sense, even though it is a 6th century document, it is still useful in the sense that it has the chance to be reliable and therefore can potentially correct some of the Greek mistakes, and it also has the value that in Aramaic, very similar to Hebrew in terms of the language and the alphabet, and therefore you can correctly convey the names. But I don't think there are any extant Hebrew manuscripts of Matanyah that date to the 1st, 2nd, or 3rd century, and they would have to date to the 1st century, and I don't think there's any such thing.
Oh, okay. All right. Well, I just found it interesting that you know, it corrects the generation numbers of generations problem, and so you have a better connection with the Torah if you consider that what they were trying to depict was the genealogy from David to Mary, and then the Messiah being the seed of the woman, and she married a Joseph as well, but it was a very common name, right? So
right.
But
comment that you can I interrupt again because you've made another point that that many people may not pick up on, and it's a good opportunity to share something that is interesting. in the first prophecy in the whole of Scripture, it's made in Bereshith. It's a prediction is made in the Garden of Eden, and it's after HaSatan, Satan, has been allowed to slither in and has been allowed, by the way, to corrupt Yah's testimony. He misquotes Yahweh, takes what he says out of context, and twists it to serve his agenda, which is exactly how the religion of Christianity operates. And what he says is that the seed of woman is going to ultimately undo the damage that HaSatan has done by beguiling Chawa and Adam. So it is the seed of woman is the prophetic reference, and so that is one of the two reasons that the genealogy of Mary, since Joseph had nothing to do with the birth of the child, why it's given through Mary. The other reason it's given through Mary is that there was an act along the way between David and Mary where an individual was specifically excluded from being the forefather of the Messiah, so it had to happen through a different set of children going back to David, and that's why it's presented that way.
Okay. Yeah. All right. Well, yeah, if I could just, as far as for the benefit of your listeners, in my own experiences, I would say, do yourself a favor and question, Paul.
Mm-hmm.
And I think one of the real death nails for the religious Christians is, the idea that the Torah has to be kept perfectly, or mm-hmm. you're cursed.
Right.
And the misquote of Deuteronomy 27:26 and Galatians 10, I think it was. But I've never regretted questioning Paul. And in fact, mm-hmm. before that, there was another ministry I listened to, and they. Am I talking too much again?
What's helpful here, Jason? If you'll pause for a moment, let me comment on some of the things that you've said. First of all, questioning Paul. It was something that I did not do until very recently. It was only 3 or 4 years ago that I came to do that. After the break, we'll return to this topic. I'll share with you how I came to question Paul and how you can do it as well, and why it is important to do so. And then I want to address Jason's comment on observing the Torah has nothing to do with keeping it perfectly. That is an extraordinarily important myth that we should shatter. This is Shattering Myths. Welcome back to the second hour of Shattering Myths. Our number, should you wish to engage in this conversation, is 877-300-7645. Jason brought up 2 points right before the end of the break, and I'd like to address each of them. But I want to address each of them with kind of the enough information that you, as listeners, can appreciate why he came to that conclusion, how I came to that conclusion, and why you, too, should come to the same conclusion. The first was we should question Paul. Questioning Paul is the name of a book that I wrote. You can find it at questioningpaul.com. I would encourage you to go there, questioningpaul.com. The reason that I called it Questioning Paul is that Paul's name is Shaul. Shaul means to question in Hebrew. It is the same name as Sheol, which is the Hebrew name for hell. So Paul's name, Shaul, means to question, and so the fact that God never misses a trick, names always tell us a lot about an individual. So I named the book Questioning Paul. I was originally encouraged to investigate, based upon a good friend in New Zealand, whether or not the Christian church was right in being able to say that Paul was opposed to the Torah, that Paul said that the Torah could not save, that there was that the Torah's covenant was of the flesh, and that it enslaved, and there therefore had to be a new covenant that was of the Spirit, and that the sign of the covenant, which was circumcision, was actually counterproductive. And they wanted me to say, is Paul being misquoted? Is he being mistranslated? Do older manuscripts correct these misunderstandings? What is going on here? Is Paul genuinely opposed to Yahweh and to the Torah, or is he just being twisted and manipulated into that position? I devoted 6 days a week, 12 hours a day, a year of my life to answering that question. And I began writing this book called Questioning Paul with the mindset, the perspective, and you should know this perspective, of demonstrating that that Paul was being misquoted and misinterpreted. And as I got through about the a third of the way through the book of Galatians, I'm having a tough time with this because Paul is misquoting Yahweh's Torah. Misquoting it, he is taking it out of context, which is a beguiling thing to do, and then he is making claims based upon those misquotes that are the antithesis of what God's saying in context. And I'm having a real tough time with this, and I'm having a tough time with Paul's timeline because his timeline is impossible. So it's obvious that he's lying, and then I'm having a tough time with the fact that what he says in one place is inconsistent with what he says in another place. And so I'm really struggling with this, but I'm continuing to try to make sense of all of this. And then I get to the point where Paul says that the covenant that was memorialized in the Torah on Mount Sinai was of Hagar, not of Sarah. That it was that it enslaved and was of the flesh, as opposed to it is the most liberating offer in the universe, and that there was a second new and different covenant that he was promoting, and that was full stop. At that point, I said, I can't play this charade anymore. I can't go this place unless I'm willing to accept the reality that Paul is not only lying, but that he is overtly opposed to the Torah and to Yahweh, then I cannot be honest with myself. I might as well be religious, because there is no way to reconcile what he is saying here in Yah's Torah. Paul is therefore a false prophet. I would encourage you to read Questioning Paul. It is questioningpaul.com. It is free for your consideration. In that book, I probably have 1% of the ammunition that could be wielded against Paul, and yet it is absolutely irrefutable. It is a mountain of evidence that condemns him as a false prophet. And the reason that's important is that when Paul's gone, the religion of Christianity is gone. Paul was the founder of the religion of Christianity. Without Paul, there is no Christianity, and almost everything that Christians have been led to believe that takes them away from God, that stumbling block is removed when Paul is discarded. Simply the most important thing you can do if you are a Christian is to begin to question Paul so that you can remove that rubbish from your memory banks. The second thing that Jason said, and then I'd like Jason's comments on this, is that the realization, after you come to realize that Paul is a false prophet, the next important realization is that it was Paul who presented the Torah as something that must be obeyed, and that Paul said, because you cannot obey it perfectly, it cannot save you, it condemns you. That is not what the Torah says. The Torah never says that you have to obey it perfectly. There isn't even a Hebrew word for obey. Moreover, Torah is not law. So when we return after the break, explain this a little bit more, and then we're going to have Jason's comments on Paul and the Torah. This is Shattering This. I am your host, Yada, 877-376-45. Hello again, and Welcome back to Shattering Myths. We have Jason on the line. I'm going to complete my thoughts on his comment regarding the Torah is not there to be obeyed perfectly. And then we're going to have Jason share his impressions of what we've been talking about. There is no Hebrew word for obey. When you read obey in your English Bible translation, it's a corruption of the Hebrew word shama, which means to listen. Almost all of Yah's instructions were actually written in the imperfect, which means that he's not expecting us to be perfect. The imperfect means that that I just don't want you to do things like bear false witness, commit adultery, kill on an ongoing basis. Don't make it part of your life. So God knows that we're imperfect, and the whole purpose of the Torah is to create this covenant relationship, and the byproduct of the covenant relationship is to make us perfect. The third codicil of the covenant is walk to me and become perfect, and it is the Torah that presents the means that we walk to God, whereby he makes us perfect, which happens to be day of matzah, is where we are perfected by God. But it's a seven-step process. Those things said, Jason, you've been very patient. What's your reaction to what you've just heard?
I agree with you. I guess that, you know, the best way I can benefit your listeners is just to talk about my experience. And ironically, I sort of went on this journey with, you know, other teaching resources telling me that Paul didn't actually refute the Torah. And so because of that, I began to look at the Torah and mm-hmm. and God's instructions and, you know, started to consciously, like, make choices to observe the Sabbath, you know, the best way I could, you know, under my circumstances. And just looking deeper and considering the Torah, Prophet, and Psalms. And it was never regretted for a minute, like, very liberating. But at the same time, I became more and more frustrated with Paul's letters. And I even at one point, according to 2 Peter 3:16, I decided, well, I'm not schooled enough in the Torah yet to understand Paul's letters, so I'm going to just not read them. And I was still frustrated with Paul because I thought, like, how can this guy be the apostle to the Gentiles and yet be so horrible at explaining the elementary stuff about the Torah, which, that, you know, a Gentile would be ignorant of, and to confuse sure. so many issues.
Yes.
When I came across some of your work and stuff, it really helped me regain my focus on the Torah, and the amplification of the original language is really helpful. I'd love to see an amplification of, you know, like Deuteronomy 27, 26 and whatnot. And, you know, I got my own interlinear and I'm gauging on my own. And it's such a more amazing experience, you know, that you're not severed from Yahweh, that he's engaging with you every bit as much as the Messiah did when he was here. Yeah.
Correct. In fact, more so. Astute observations, Jason. First of all, the books that Jason, in all likelihood, has read, and I don't know specifically, but I'm assuming that Jason has read Questioning Paul, which I've told you is available at questioningpaul.com, that he has probably read significant amounts of Yada Yah. It's available to you free at yadayah.com. And that he may have read An Introduction to God, which is available to you at intro2god.org. Collectively, there's about 5,000, 6,000 pages of information between those books. The style of those books is designed so that I am irrelevant to you. I want to make myself as irrelevant and as useless as as absolutely possible. The goal is let's present Yah's testimony as accurately and completely as possible. And then what I do is, after sharing with you what he has said, is I try to walk readers through, here is what the full import of these words mean. Here's the context that we're reviewing this discussion in. This is the historic reality and our present reality relative to what is being said here. And I think I only have one useful attribute in all of this, and that is that I think I'm reasonably rational, logical. I love to learn by making connections, by showing how things are related, and it's just not this fuzz of unrelated things happening in the world. And so my commentary is there just to help you understand the thought process and to transition between the Amplified Scriptures, or to observe so that you know, now you have access to the evidence, and then the commentary is to help you transition from knowing to understanding. And once you have that foundation, then I become completely irrelevant, and you can do what Jason is doing, which is you acquire your own interlinears and lexicons, and you begin to study Yah's teaching on your own. His last comment there was, I wish you'd expand your amplifications and do Devarim is actually the name of the book. It means words. Deuteronomy is a horrible corruption. It means second law in Greek. There is no second law. There is no law to begin with. So Deuteronomy is a hellish corruption of Yah's testimony, is Devarim, which is words. The reason I can't just amplify all of the Torah, prophets, and Psalms is that we all have things that we're good at. We have passions, and God likes us to invest our time where we're passionate. My passion is understanding, and therefore I can't just translate a passage and then move on to the next passage. I am just filled with all sorts of ideas that I want to share with readers, so that they come to see the all of what can be learned from these words. And so that's the reason why I haven't translated the entirety of the Torah, prophets, and Psalms. Your thoughts, Jason?
I think ultimately it's best for everybody to do it themselves. And I would have you take it upon yourself to amplify all the scriptures for everybody, because again, it's the same problem with people wanting to have an inerrant version of of the scriptures. Because it's something they can kind of hang their hat on, and unfortunately, it's
not have to think anything.
You do have to engage with Yahweh and sort of observe it, walk it out, and kind of
experience
feel
it
out, I guess.
Yeah, experience it. That's one of the things that you made a comment that I didn't capitalize on, and I really should. That the experience that we have of being able to observe, which means to closely examine and carefully consider the Torah, prophets, and Psalms, is a more personal, more enlightening, more visual even experience than the disciples had who walked in Yahusha's company. If I were given the choice to spend a year just mano a mano hanging out with Yahusha, which is the real name of Jesus, Yahusha means Yah saves, or spending that year with Yahweh studying his Torah, prophets, and Psalms, I can tell you for certain that I'm going to learn more. I'm going to find more treasure and come closer to Yahweh studying his Torah, prophets, and Psalms than I would spending that year hanging out with Yahusha. And that is, God is as real to us, and he can be understood if we're willing to invest the time doing that. He'll talk to you. You can respond to him. You can learn everything you need to know. Now, I'm not being the least bit disrespectful for Yahusha, because every time that he was asked a question, he said, "Hey, man, why are you asking me? Why don't you read the Torah? If you read the Torah, you would understand. Don't turn to me. Turn to Yahweh." That's what he said all of the time. So what I'm telling you, that my focus isn't on Yahusha, my focus is on Yahweh, through Yahweh's word, that's exactly what Yahusha said. And in fact, Yahusha is the living embodiment of the Torah. He was Torah observant. He walked out of the pages of the Torah. He lived the Torah. He taught the Torah. And so if we want to understand him, the place you go is the Torah. Is that your conclusion as well, Jason?
Yeah, and also it's a good reason to, don't read, disassociate yourself with Paul. If he's hostile with the Torah, then he's hostile with Yahusha.
Yahweh. Yes, you know? Correct. Yeah, Yahusha's most famous statement was the Teaching on the Mount. And the Teaching on the Mount begins with and concludes with addressing the relevance of the Torah. And he said that nothing in the Torah will be annulled. And anyone who speaks against the Torah is the least of the least valuable, the least meritorious of humans. And the reality is that Yahusha told us that the moment we lose sight of the merit of the Torah and that the Torah itself is the narrow gate to life, then we have no hope of knowing him. We have no hope of engaging in a relationship with God. We have no hope of salvation.
Yeah.
It's also interesting. Go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, because of those verses where Yahusha speaks of the Torah not being destroyed, not one jot or tittle. I brought that up when I was attending a Bible study and stuff, and when I began to question these things, and people that I was politely asked to leave the Bible study. Other people I spoke to, they just couldn't answer that question. When I started to try to make time on Saturday on a Shabbat to observe the Sabbath, and I was sort of even criticized by fellow Christians. What are you doing? You don't have to keep the law, and when I brought that up, it was just like it could not, it's right out of Yahusha's mouth.
Yes. In fact, when we come back after the break, we'll have our concluding comments on Christians ignoring what Yahusha said. The very fact that they claim to follow him and yet they ignore everything he said and choose to believe Paul instead. This is Shattering Myths. I am Yada. To the final segment of Shattering Myths this morning. Jason, who's calling from Toronto, made a comment in the last segment that I'd like to address. He said that when he began to quote Yahusha's words in a Christian Bible study, they politely asked him to leave. Now, that is really interesting because I routinely am called Antichrist by people who call themselves followers of Christ. The reality is that Christians do not like what Yahusha said. They don't listen to what Yahusha said. They don't accept what Yahusha said. They don't embrace what Yahusha said. I accept everything that he said because everything he said confirmed the Torah. Everything he said. And so I fully embrace everything he said. I love what he had to say. His commentary on the Torah is extraordinarily enlightening. But Christians reject it out of hand. They hate what they call the Sermon on the Mount, because the Sermon on the Mount is a treatise on the Torah. His first and largest ever public address is a treatise on the Torah, being that it's the only means to salvation, and Christians hate it. It even ends with Yahusha telling them to be wary of the Benjamite wolf, who will come wearing sheep's clothing, that will try to dissuade them from observing the Torah. and that as a consequence, he will not know them. When they show up and say, hey, let us into heaven, he says, go away. I don't know you. The reality is there isn't a Christian on planet Earth and never has been one that follows Yahusha. If they did, they would be Torah observant. If they were, they would not be Christians. Not one Christian has ever been admitted to heaven. Not one. Never will be one. No Christian follows the example set by Yahusha. If you want to follow Yahusha, you will have to cease being a Christian. You will have to discard Paul. You will have to follow Yahusha's advice, which is to observe the Torah. And by observing the Torah, it's not about what you do. It's about what you understand. In the book, An Introduction to God, introtogod.org, for those willing wanting to listen to it, I devote several hundred pages to a singular psalm. It's written by Dode, who we know as David. Dode means love. It is 176 verses devoted entirely to the Torah and how to observe the Torah. So not only that you understand what the Torah is teaching us, but that you respond appropriately to it. And not once in 176 verses of a song written entirely about the Torah does Dode mention a single rule that has to be kept. It's all about understanding so that you can respond to the covenant offer that God is making. And as a result of his covenant, you can embrace his gift of salvation. Interesting, one last comment here, Joseph, Jason, on what you said, is that Yahusha in the Sermon on the Mount, the teaching on the Mount, specifically says that the way is narrow and few find it to eternal life, and that the way is broad and many find it and popular, that leads to death and destruction. If Christianity were true, it's popular, then Yahusha lied. So there is a 0% possibility that Christianity can be the way to life because it is popular, and therefore it would make Yahusha a liar. Last comments, Jason, on any of this?
Yeah, well, I would just, I really appreciate you digging into the scriptures, and I think, you know, if we all do that, us all coming from different places and circumstances, we can all, gain insights from one another. And, I would have called myself a Christian, not too long ago.
As did I.
But, yeah. And I think the main thing was is that, and I think there may be a lot of people out there today that maybe they call themselves a Christian and they're, you know, submitting to Paul's doctrine. And I would just say the difference, I think, for me was that I valued the truth, and I wanted to know who this person was called the Messiah, and or Messiah's better pronunciation, but you know what I mean?
Yes.
So in that, when somebody told me that Jesus isn't his real name, I actually gave a hoot about that.
Yes.
And when somebody told me that...
So does God, by the way. God hates being called Jesus. He despises it. So God agrees with you. Jason, we've reached the end of our program today. You've made a lot of great comments and insights and questions. I want to thank you very much for calling. God does care about his name. It is Yahweh. He has but one name. And if you do not know it, you do not know him. This has been Shattering Myths. I thank you for listening today. We'll be with you again at this time tomorrow.
There's a guy named Dr. Wallach who is anything but your typical doctor, both a veterinarian and a naturopathic physician. Doc asks, why is this country spending more money on healthcare? By far.